letter was sent to the White House in December 1945. The report contained many names of persons in and out of government service, concerning whom there were then unverified accusations. Among the many names mentioned, I now find, was that of Harry Dexter White, who had been in the Treasury Department for many years, and who was at that time an Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. As best I can now determine, I first learned of the accusations against White early in February 1946, when an FBI report specifically discussing activities of Harry Dexter White was brought to my attention. The February report was delivered to me by General Vaughn and was also brought to my personal attention by Secretary of State Burns. This report showed that serious accusations had been made against White, but it pointed out that it would be practically impossible to prove these charges with the evidence then at hand. Immediately after the matter was brought to my attention, I sent a copy of the report with a covering note signed by me to White's immediate superior, the Secretary of the Treasury, Fred Vinson. In this note, dated February the 6th, 1946, I said, "I am enclosing you a memorandum from the Secretary of State, which came to me this morning. I suggest that you read it, keeping it entirely confidential, and then I think you, the Secretary of State, and myself should discuss the situation and find out what we should do." That's the end of the quotation from my note to Mr. Vinson. Later, I believe it was the same day, I discussed the matter with Secretary Vinson as well as with Secretary Burns. As I have mentioned, Mr. White was at that time an Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. It had been planned for some time that he should be transferred from that position to be the United States member on the board
of executive directors
of the International Monetary Fund, a new international organization then in process of being set up. His appointment had been sent to the Senate for the new position, and it was confirmed on February the 6th, shortly before I saw Secretaries Burns and Vinson. And in this situation, I requested Secretary Vinson to consult with the appropriate officials of the government and come back to me with recommendations. Secretary of the Treasury Vinson consulted with Attorney General Tom Clark and other government officials. When the results of these consultations were reported to me, the conclusion was reached that the appointment should be allowed to take its normal course. The final responsibility for this decision was, of course, mine. The reason for this decision was that the charges which had been made to the FBI against Mr. White also involved many other persons. Hundreds of FBI agents were engaged in investigating the charges against all those who had been accused. It was of great importance to the nation that this investigation be continued in order to prove or disprove these charges and to determine if still other persons were implicated. Any unusual action with respect to Mr. White's appointment might well have alerted all the persons involved to the fact that the investigation was underway and thus endanger the success of the investigation. It was originally planned that the United States would support Mr. White for election to the top managerial position in the International Monetary Fund, that of managing director, a more important post than that of member of the board of executive directors. But following the receipt of the FBI report and the consultations with members of my cabinet, it was decided that he would be limited to membership on the board of directors. With his duties thus restricted, he would be subject to the supervision of the Secretary of State, and his position would be less important and much less sensitive, if it were sensitive at all, than the position then held by him as Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. Tonight, I want the American people to understand that the course we took protected the public interest and security, and at the same time permitted the intensive FBI investigation then in progress to go forward. No other course could have served both these purposes. The appointment was accordingly allowed to go through, and the investigation continued. And in 1947, the results of the investigation up to that time were laid before the federal grand jury in New York by the Department of Justice. Mr. White was one of the witnesses called before the grand jury. The grand jury did not indict Mr. White, although it was the same grand jury which indicted the 12 top communists in the country. All this was done in the American way, by due process of law. In the meantime, Mr. White, in April 1947, resigned his office, referring to reasons of health. Although my recent offhand comment concerning his resignation was an error, the fact is that he was separated from the government service promptly when the necessity for secrecy concerning the intensive investigation by the FBI came to an end. He died in 1948 after appearing before the Un-American Activities Committee of the House. Thus, what this new administration has attempted becomes clear. It has distorted the decision that enabled an investigation of great importance to proceed, as it did, unembarrassed, and with ample safeguard to the public interest. I say this decision has been distorted into an alleged harboring of communists. This is shameful demagoguery. It's worse than that. Herbert Brownell, Jr., the Attorney General of the United States, the highest legal officer in our government, has degraded the highest function of government, the administration of justice, into cheap political trickery. He's made the Justice Department headquarters for political skullduggery. The Attorney General of the United States has not only degraded his office, he has deceived his chief as to what he proposed to do. An insane Harry Dexter White was known to be a communist spy by the very people who appointed him. He lied to the American people. In backing away from this charge with the mealy-mouthed statement that he had no intention of impugning the loyalty of any high official of the prior administration, he lied to the American people again. If this were a matter which merely involved the name and reputation of Harry S. Truman, private citizen of Independence, Missouri, I would not be as concerned as I am. I can take care of myself. I believe that the American people know me well enough for my service as captain of Battery D in World War I, to my service as president of the United States, to know that I've always acted with the best interests of my country at heart. But Mr. Brownell knows that in this matter, when the final decision was mine, I relied upon my principal advisors. One of those most concerned, was the then Secretary of the Treasury and later the beloved Chief Justice of the United States, Fred M. Vinson, who is now dead. No man I ever knew was a more patriotic American. The wild imputations of disloyalty which Mr. Brownell has made were directed not only against me, but also against him. I do not mind too much for myself or for those members of my cabinet who are alive, for we are able to defend ourselves. But I deeply resent these cowardly insinuations against one who is dead. There's one aspect of this affair that should be clear to everyone. That is the obvious political motivation of this attack on me. In launching this attack, the Republican Attorney General worked hand in glove with the Republican National Committee. The manner and the timing of what has been done made it perfectly clear that the powers of the Attorney General have been prostituted for hopes of political gain. No election, my friends, is worth that much. The whole history of our republic does not reveal any other such attack as this, by a new administration on an outgoing president. Up to now, no administration has ever accused a former president of disloyalty. In communist countries, it is the practice, when a new government comes to power, to accuse the outgoing officials of treason, to frame public trials for them, and to degrade and prosecute the key officials of the previous government. That's the way of the communists, whose only god is power. That's the way they run their political affairs. It's not the American way. It's not the way Americans behave. At least, that hasn't been so in the past. This tragic debasement of high office by the Attorney General is bad enough, but the thing I wish most to get over to you tonight is that this incident is only the most publicized and the most recent example of the decay of the basic principles of freedom now taking place in this country. It is now evident that the present administration has fully embraced for political advantage McCarthyism. I'm not referring to the senator from Wisconsin. He's only important in that his name has taken on a dictionary meaning in the world. That meaning is the corruption of truth, the abandonment of our historical devotion to fair play. It is the abandonment of due process of law. It is the use of the big lie and the unfounded accusation against any citizen in the name of Americanism and security. It is the rise to power of the demagogue who lives on untruth. It is the spread of fear and the destruction of faith in every level of our society. My friends, this is not a partisan matter. This horrible cancer is eating at the vitals of America, and it can destroy the great edifice of freedom. If this sordid, deliberate, and unprecedented attack on the loyalty of a former president of the United States will serve to alert the people to the terrible danger that our nation and each citizen faces, then it will have been a blessing in disguise. I hope this will arouse you to fight this evil at every level in our national life. I hope that this may serve to stir the conscience of the present administration itself. May God preserve our great nation. May God preserve the Constitution. And may He preserve the birthright of freedom in every heart.
The combined facilities of the radio and television networks have presented an address by former President Harry S. Truman. Mr. Truman spoke from Kansas City, Missouri.
Our next regularly scheduled program will be heard in 8 minutes. Meanwhile, CBS Radio presents an interlude of recorded music.
preceding this recorded musical interlude, you've heard an address by the former President of the United States, Harry S. Truman, speaking in Kansas City, Missouri. Suspense, usually brought to you at this time by the makers of Autolite products, was not heard because of the special broadcast just concluded. Tune in tomorrow night, Tuesday, at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time, for Suspense. This is the CBS Radio Network.
And this is KOOK in Billings. If you've been thinking you'd have to pay an extravagant price to get the last word in television advancement, Marshall Wells and Laurel have a surprise for you. Stop in and see their line of Arvin Years Ahead TV in a complete range of models and sizes with prices starting as low as $179.95. 17, 21, 24, and 27-inch screens in beautiful cabinets of mahogany, limed oak, cherry, and maple. You can't beat Arvin at Marshall Wells in Laurel.
Your local Kaiser and Willis dealers present Lowell Thomas and the News. From Washington, from Augusta, Georgia, from Milwaukee comes today's news, reported by Lowell Thomas, the world's most famous newscaster. Would you like to cut your driving costs to the bone and be able to put up to $600 extra in your savings account this year? Then listen. Thanks to a new lower price, you can now own a smart new Henry J for only $1,399, plus freight and local taxes. That means the new Henry J costs hundreds of dollars less than any other full-sized car. But that's just the beginning of the Henry J's amazing economy. You can drive it for as little as one penny a mile for gasoline, and that can save you up to $81 a year. You can save on tires, too, up to $20 a year. Up to $50 a year more on service, and you can save up to $60 on lower license fees, insurance, and other charges. So don't wait. See and drive the new money-saving Henry J at your dealers tomorrow. Now, the dealers from coast to coast who sell and service the Kaiser, the Henry J, and the Willis present Lowell Thomas.
Good evening, everybody. Former President Truman tonight, as you undoubtedly heard, followed the line of argument that had been anticipated and that had been predicted. We might have anticipated also that he would be vigorous about it, Harry S. Truman being a political gladiator known for hitting hard. However, he excelled even himself in the way he lit into Attorney General Herbert Brownell for having made a charge that Harry Truman had knowingly promoted an accused Soviet spy for higher office. Of course, the Attorney General stated later that he never questioned the loyalty of the ex-president. But HST would have none of that. He blasted Brownell with vitriolic phrases. As for the facts and the logic of the business, the former president said what he had been hearing, that the assignment of Harry Dexter White to the International Monetary Fund was confirmed so that a watch might be kept on him. If his appointment had been canceled, said Mr. Truman a few moments ago, it would have given him warning and would have handicapped the FBI in its campaign against red espionage in our government. In this, he had to take back what he said before, that he had never heard of the charges made against Harry Dexter White. Tonight, he said he did not receive the first FBI report on the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, but he did get the second and stronger FBI report brought to his attention by Secretary of State James Burns, now Governor of South Carolina. In this, he confirms the statement made by Burns. He says that he discussed that second FBI report with Secretary of the Treasury Vinson and Attorney General Clark, and together they decided on the plan to keep Harry Dexter White on the Monetary Fund, though not at the high level previously intended for him. The former president did not state that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover had any part in it, although previous Democratic declarations had been that the FBI director had sat in on the conference and had agreed with the plan. That has been one of the critical points in this whole debate, and the understanding is that J. Edgar Hoover denies any part in the decision. We will have to wait for a definite statement from the director of the FBI on that point. He should be an authority on the subject of the plan to keep an accused Soviet spy on the Monetary Fund so that the FBI could investigate him. Mr. Truman also admitted that he made a mistake when he said that Harry Dexter White had been fired when found to be disloyal. He resigned a year later for reasons of health, which still left the question of the high praise and congratulations with which President Truman accepted the resignation of White. Well, tonight, the comment at this moment is strictly political. The Democrats are saying that the Truman explanation is perfectly satisfactory. the Republicans call it, not plausible and contradictory. The Supreme Court upholds an indictment against five Democratic leaders in Mississippi charged with perjury. They were members of a pro-Truman wing of the party in Mississippi and were charged with selling federal jobs. Questioned by a congressional subcommittee back in 1951, they gave answers that brought about an indictment for perjury. They took their case to the Supreme Court, which today turned them down. In Georgia, moves began today to abolish the public schools. Governor Talmadge asked the legislature to submit to the voters an amendment to the state constitution, which would alter the school system in Georgia. Substituting...